Welcome to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio at blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWPRadio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leto and Will TLD Vapidez.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live right here tonight. Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio is on the air, episode number 22 officially, and we've got a lot to talk about tonight. A big few days in the wrestling business. I hope you joined us on Sunday night at our Royal Rumble post-game show where we went over everything about the Royal Rumble. If not, you could find it on iTunes at iTunes.com or wherever. Just go open up your iTunes, search Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. It will come up. It will be there. Also, I just want to thank everybody for helping us get over 1,000 likes on Facebook. Facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. Our reach is extending. We're getting far out there, folks. We have not stopped growing. We're just going to keep going, just keep going. But tonight, we have a very, very, very special guest on the line. ECW original, the extreme referee, none other than Jim Molyneux. Jim, how you doing tonight, man?
Good. How are you, Jay?
Hey, you know what? I'm hanging in there. I just got done in the gym clanging and banging, getting a little pump in, and I'm ready to talk wrestling. I'm ready to talk about your career, what's going on with your promotion, Old Time Wrestling. Let's kick it off with that. Tell us a little bit about Old Time Wrestling and what it's all about.
Well, actually, I mean, yes, it is called Old Time Wrestling, but we kind of got the feeling that old time people aren't coming to that. So we're just going with OTW, but we put a tag on it, call it Classic Pro Wrestling. So it's OTW Classic Pro Wrestling, and you can check us out on the web, unfortunately, back at oldtimewrestling.net. And we're just a local promotion school that runs weekly shows. In our building, and so we don't have to tear down a ring and set up and you know, independent promotions that go around and do that, and then they have to worry about insurance for buildings and all the other kind of crazy costs. We're set up in our own building in Williamstown, New Jersey. We're a half hour out of Philadelphia, a half hour out of Atlantic City, so we're right in the heart of South Jersey. And we train guys, actually grew out of another wrestling school in the area that I won't mention that we split off from. And we're still training guys, but we're running the shows weekly. Once a month, we'll do an evening show also. So we're averaging about 5 shows a month. And we usually take the summer off, but we run from September to May. And we do a couple specialty, kind of gimmick shows, if you want to call them that, along the way. So this Saturday we have our regular 2 o'clock show. We'll have our special 7 o'clock show. And if you go to the website, you can see most of the matches listed. There's a 2 out of 3 falls match for our OTW title. There's an I quit match. There's a last man standing match. So it's a little special on the 7 o'clock shows. We do them once a month. And then the two specialty shows that we do every year, one's coming up on the 23rd at 2 o'clock, and it's called Battle Bowl. And we have 3 titles with OTW. We have a tag title, what we call a classics title, and our heavyweight title. And what we'll do is we'll run 3 battle royals, 1 for each belt, and then later in the show, the winners will go for that title. And then later, actually, we'll finish off the year with something we call Soul Survivor. And we came up with this idea just one night out of necessity, where we just threw everybody's name into a bowl and started picking names out of the hat, and they were the matchups. And actually, it was the fans, and we still do it this way. The fans pick the names out of the hat. So there's no question of whether it's legit and all that kind of stuff. The fans pick the names out of the hat, and we just keep working it down until there's one guy left, and he's the sole survivor. So that's basically what we do. With the training, we'll train guys, try to get them to whatever goal it is, whether it's a weekend warrior, whether it's Ring of Honor, TNA, WWE. We've got a couple of girls that we're training right now also. And we've got a couple of guys on the cusp of their goal that they really want to reach. I'm not going to mention names or exactly what they're doing because I don't want to curse anything. But we got some guys right there on the edge of breaking through for us under the OTW title. My partner and I, we trained guys at another school, and those guys were kind of fairly responsible for a couple of them getting it to the WWE. But we went off on our own, and we kind of started over, and we're getting there with these guys. It's a good bunch of guys. They're hard work and come out every week and just give it their all.
Now, you just don't only train wrestlers. You train referees, correct, managers. What other aspects are for your school?
Well, I know a guy who can train a referee.
Yeah, I hope so.
So we got that covered. Right now, we really don't have any managers. Although the girls are kind of working on that too, to valet a little bit too. But yeah, there's really no parameters. The only thing we don't train, and it's going to kind of sound funny coming from me from the ECW world, is that we don't train hardcore. You really can't train for that, in my opinion. If you want to bring aisle 13 of Home Depot to the school, I'll teach you how to break it over your head and or fall through it or whatever. But there's really not that much to it. So it's really the basics. And like I said, it's to get guys to their goal. So we help them with their conditioning a little bit, help them with their diet a little bit. We don't do the weights because we don't have the facility with us. But some of our guys do go together at the gym after they train. So they're working on their own program there too. So, I mean, that's the only real parameter is that we don't do the hardcore stuff. I just don't feel it's trainable. But if you get the basics down and put on a good solid match and can tell a good story, which I think is the most important thing in a match, you can get out there and get on the independents if you want, or like I said before, get the Ring of Honor or whatever your goal is.
Oh, absolutely. And I was looking a little bit at your website and kind of doing my homework on this interview, and I saw your champion at the time, your OTW champion, and the guy's name's BJ Hard Candy. Absolutely hilarious. What a funny wrestling name that is. There's no sexual innuendos at all in that name.
Absolutely not. And actually, the BJ is short for Bazooka Joe. So that's where the candy reference all comes in from.
Tell us about him. Is he a homegrown guy? Did you train him?
He's not. He's a guy that we brought in. We take guys, we're willing to, have guys come in and work for us without any problem. We've had some guys from North Jersey, New York, Maryland. BJ Harking is actually from Delaware. We'll take guys in. We'll even with training, if the guys are already trained and they feel they're missing something in their training or there's something missing out on the matches that they do, we open it up and come on in and maybe we can help you work on something. Of course, we'll charge you a little bit for it. We won't charge you as much as we would if you're, a guy just walking off the street. We're doing that with a couple of guys now who said, I need to be brushed up and I need to work on stuff to make myself better. And they love it. They think it's the best move they've ever made.
Well, we know an independent wrestler right here on the show. And it's my man, Will TLD Vasquez.
It's TLD.
Yeah.
Four-time tag team champion. I'm curvy. I'm cute. I'm a champion.
TLD, what's going on tonight, man?
Man, I am sitting here with my hot cocoa, enjoying my marshmallows, man. Thank you very much for asking me. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. We've got the one and only extreme referee, Jim Molyneux, on the line, and I know you got some questions for him, TLD. Let's go ahead and hear it.
Yeah, so let's get straight into it. For those people who don't know about you, tell us a little bit about how you got into just being a referee. Because some people have always asked me, coming up to me, is like, how do I be a referee? How do I just get into that kind of role? So what would you advise people if they were looking to be a pro wrestling referee? What steps should they take to get to a level like you've been to?
Honestly, with me, it was knock on wood. lots of luck, being at the right place at the right time. I mean, I had the training, no problem. I trained at a place called God, now I can't even remember the place of the school. But the Tri-State Wrestling Alliance was a local promotion in the Philadelphia area back in the late 80s. And Joel Goodhart was the promoter. And I went to him. I actually wanted to be a manager. I wanted to be the next Bobby Heenan or Jim Cornette, because I'd already come to the conclusion that 5'9 and 200 and something pounds at the time, that wasn't the kind of wrestler that you would see. You know, everybody was Hogan and Sid and these big, huge monsters. So they knew there was no way I'd be able to wrestle. Plus, I really don't have the athleticism for it. But he said, I don't need a manager. He said, I need a referee. Are you willing to train? And he gave me all the details of the school and how much it would cost and you know, all the stuff anybody, you know, tells you when you sign up. So he said, you know, think about it for a couple of days. Give me a call back. So I called him back 5 minutes later and said, sure, no problem. So I started training the next week. And I think it was like 8 weeks later, I had my first match that I reffed. So I was lucky in the fact that the school had a promotion. And then when that promotion shut down, Todd Gordon was involved behind the scenes. And Todd started ECW and brought everybody over. And I managed to survive through all the different changes of management and Booker and all that for ECW. So in that light, I definitely had a lot of luck. But having a school or a place you can train where they have a promotion that runs on a fairly regular basis, Tri-State, I think we were running pretty much like 4 times a month, maybe 5 times a month. So we were pretty busy. So that was a big thing. But, yeah, definitely getting out there and getting it and learning the craft and observing other people and, you know, just being a sponge, taking everything in is really important.
Very cool. And what would you say now today with refereeing, what do you say like one of the toughest craft is to learn about being a referee? What makes it difficult to learn? What do you think the hardest part is to learn about being a referee?
It had all kinds of different matches. So you as a referee, you have to be able to adjust to the guys that are in the ring. You know, in one night I'm working with the Dudleys against New Jack and Mustafa. And then the next match that I get, I'm with Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero. So you know, it's being able to adapt to the different situations. And also if you're doing something like ECW, you have to be able to duck and get out of the way.
Yeah. I remember the Iron Sheik said, you know, it takes 3 things to make good match. It takes a referee, a heel, and a face. And that's the thing. A lot of people don't realize that the referee is crucial in helping a good match progress and get to where it needs to be, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But the main thing, in my opinion, with the referee is being involved and helping in the match, but being able to stay out of the way and not become part of the match. There are as many matches as I've done, I'll bet you people can't name 5 matches that I did, which to me is great because that means I did my job as a referee. Nobody knows who I am, but everybody can tell you who the wrestlers were in the match.
Well, I'll tell you somebody who knows who you are, and it's my man who's on a lot of my other co-hosts, John JCD DeMastelli. He's been he was at a lot of ECW shows. And, John, I know you got some great questions for Jim tonight, my man.
Yeah, what's going on, guys? How's everything? Jim, great talking to you. I'll put it to you like this. A lot of ECW shows on Queens Boulevard between the Elks Lodge and the Lost Battalion Hall I went to. So, you know, a lot of history there. Off the top of your head, you said, you know, you just said something right now that said, you know, you can't name 5 matches you refed, but you can know who were the matches. But in your opinion, during the heyday of ECW, just off the top of your head, like, What was probably like one of the greatest matches you were actually involved in?
Yeah, there were a lot of matches that were great to do. The Guerrero-Malenko matches, I loved doing those matches. The barbed wire matches between Cactus Jack and Sandman. But I think just for the mere fact that it was probably the most important match, in my opinion, in ECW history, was the three-way between Sabu, Terry Funk, and Shane Douglas. That
you were the ref for that?
That I was the ref for that match, and that was the night they crossed the line. And I think that's the match that really put ECW on the map, because at the time, we were just the local television. I don't think we had any kind of syndication outside of Philadelphia. Maybe we had New York by then. But that you have to remember, that's also the time of tape traders. So that was what got us going. People were trading to see us from not only from around the country, but in Japan and all over the world. They wanted to hear about ECW, or they heard about it, but they wanted to see ECW. And I think that was the first match that really put us on the map.
Yeah, that three-way was awesome. I remember it was probably the summer of 95. I caught you guys on a fluke at like 2 a.m. on MSG. And the first thing I remember seeing was Raven doing an interview with Stevie and Joey. And I was like, wow, I was like, this is pretty awesome. And I was hooked. And, you know, the live shows, like I said, you know, the run you guys had on Queens Boulevard was amazing.
Yeah, there were some wild shows there. You know, it's funny, everybody remembers finding ECW in the middle of the night, and the Philadelphia market, which is where I'm based out of television-wise, we were on at like 6 o'clock at night on what actually became a religious channel.
Oh, wow.
So they had this really weird, hardcore wrestling show on like Tuesday nights at 6 o'clock. And then, you know, Reverend whatever came on after us.
That's awesome. I'll tell you what, I'll never forget the first time I saw ECW. I was about 10 years old, and it was, and I'm here in Jersey, by the Jersey Shore, and it was like at about 5:30 in the evening on just a random channel. It was some kind of local channel. I don't think it was MSG just yet, but I saw Paul E. Dangerously, who I remember seeing in WCW, and from that moment, I was hooked. And you got me at 10 years old. I mean, the show wasn't really meant for 10-year-olds, but like you said before, it had something for everyone throughout its course in history, and that's awesome. But I got a question from a fan that I actually received on Twitter, and this one, I know I tried to keep the show a little bit PG, but this one I actually found pretty funny, so I got to ask you this. And if you don't want to answer it, you don't have to. But did multiple wrestlers snort coke under the ring mid-match, or was it just Balls Mahoney?
As far as I know, there were not multiple wrestlers snorting coke under the ring. And I can't even say that I know of Balls Mahoney doing it either. I don't even recall Balls going under the ring. So I can't verify either statement.
It was a funny question. I got it, and I just laughed when I read it.
That is a good one.
I thought it was awesome.
Actually, that's the first time I ever heard that one. So.
Yeah, I never heard it either. Here's just a simple one. You know, your thoughts on your longtime boss, Paul Heyman.
there are so many sides to Paul. Great, great booker. Great promotional man. Probably, and he would probably admit to this too, a horrible, horrible business owner. I really probably can answer this the best way. Is Rob Van Dam asked me one time after ECW had shut down, if Paulie called you and said, hey, I got a project I want to talk to you about, what would you say? And I told him I would call my divorce attorney. which means that I would definitely listen to what he had to say, because I would love to just, you know, listen to the gears and the wheels turn. I, you know, traveled with him a little bit, not as hard as like a Tommy Dreamer or a Taz or Bubba did in the day. But even when I did travel with him, we wouldn't talk wrestling. We'd talk other stuff, and we kind of would relate it to wrestling. Like, you know, watching inside the actor's studio and how a actor approaches his role. And we kind of like would relay that to a wrestler and how he, you know, creates his character and approaches his match and things like that. So, you know, we would talk about all kinds of stuff. It wasn't just about wrestling, but yeah, I was one of the last diehards with Paul, stood by him the whole time, believed every word he said.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's great. There's a few guys like that, and ECW will always have a legacy, a lasting legacy, although, you know, Vince McMahon tried to revive it. We all know what happened there. It didn't really work out too well. What were your thoughts on Vince McMahon trying to revive and bring back the ECW name?
There were hopes. I had hope in the beginning of it. You know, the first one night stand we thought went really great. Got a call a year later about the second one. We're kind of given the same parameters with the first one, but they said we're going to start the company up again and kind of laid everything out. And it just became very corporate as it went along, from the pay-per-view to the first TV taping to the next TV taping. And then I was done after that. I walked away after that, just because at first it was, we want you for everything. You're part of it. We want you there. Then it became, we want you at the shows you can get to. Then it became, we'll call you and let you know if we need you. And I never heard from anybody, and I'm not one to go beg, hey, what if you're, you know, are you using me? Do you want me to come in? I have a business outside of wrestling that pays my bills, and I wasn't going to take a chance on whether this would come around and pay my bills. They never offered me a contract. So I just said, you know what, I'm not going to drive all over hoping I get a job, and walked away from it. And in fact, I walked away from it just before the two shows in Philadelphia, the one at the arena and the TV taping at the Wells Fargo Center, which to me would have been like a guy from New York doing Madison Square Garden. Grew up watching Philadelphia wrestling. I mean, it's not the Spectrum, but it's what they use now. And that would have been like, you know, the big thing for me to work my local building. But I, you know, I'm happy with walking away from it. I didn't like what they did with it. And I think everybody else knew it wasn't ECW. And I think the guys got the feeling right off the bat too. And the guys who had contracts held on as long as they could and put up with it. And, you know, and then finally they were all, you know, whittled out. And I don't think, except for Tommy, I don't think there was anybody left in from the original ECW. I mean, he even got rid of guys who were their own guy, you know, guys who had worked for him for years, Stevie Richards, Al Snow. They stopped using all those guys too.
Yeah, you know, all of us diehard ECW fans saw right through it. I don't blame you for walking away when you did. I mean, the writing was on the wall pretty much when you saw the Big Show become the ECW champion, and then, you know, Bobby Lashley took it over. It was just, it just turned into another WWE brand, and that's not what we wanted to see. And they're still making money off the ECW name to this day. You could always catch the clips on WWE 24/7, which is pretty cool. I like watching the old hardcore TV tapings and stuff like that. That's pretty awesome. So, you know, if you want to get your ECW fix, definitely get it wherever you can, because ECW, the legacy will never die. You know, there are people out there, promoters. I know Shane Douglas is running an extreme type of company. There's a company called Hardcore Road Trip out there. There's all kinds of stuff where they're trying to keep this ECW legacy going. And Jim, another question about that. What are your thoughts on these other companies trying to make a name for themselves off the ECW legacy?
In a way, I don't have a problem with it, as long as they're doing something different and not calling it ECW. I don't even think those guys are really trying to copy it. I don't think it's right for somebody to come along and say we're the next ECW, because I don't think there will be a next ECW, whether it's, you know, any of those guys or Ring of Honor or CZW even tried to say they were the next ECW.
The XPW was one of them. XPW out in Los Angeles was one
right.
Of them.
Yeah. So, you know, it's great the guys get work and call it whatever they want, but as long as they don't say we're the next ECW, I don't have a problem with it. I wish them all the luck, too. I mean, more work for guys, that's great.
Absolutely. You mind taking a caller? We got a caller on the line.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. We got 310 area code. You're on the air live. What's your name? Where are you from?
Yeah, so, you know.
310. You're on the line.
Whatever they want. Hey, what's up? This is Chris, KME.
Hey, Chris, what's going on, man? We're you got a question for ECW referee Jim Molyneux.
Did you guys ever do any West Coast shows with ECW? Because I remember the only time I ever went to an ECW show was when I was in New York, and I was always, as a kid growing up in Los Angeles, wanted to see more ECW. It used to come on at like 3 o'clock in the morning out here on the Fox Sports affiliate, and I was wondering,
The only one, we did one show. We did one show in L.A. It was Heatwave 2000, I think it was the year. But, yeah, we did the one pay-per-view in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. And weirdly enough, I was in college out of state during that time. So, okay.
Cool. Chris, you had talked to me earlier before. You got anything to say? I heard you wanted to vent something out, right?
Oh, yeah, about the Royal Rumble, the internet reactions to how the Royal Rumble went, and it made no sense to me how mad the internet wrestling community was at the outcome when Vince McMahon pretty much smacked us in the face, telling us what was going to happen for the last, pretty much the last year. And it's like, why would you get so invested in this product and then get mad when you know what's going to happen? The Rock didn't come back to WWE, to look cute, what I'm saying? He came back to win the belt. And, I don't know, in my opinion, to be mad at something like that or to be mad at Cena winning the Royal Rumble when you already know it's going to happen, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, it lacks every bit of common sense you could possibly think of. I mean, it was obviously the direction they were going, and I'm not surprised by it one bit, and I'm not even mad about it at all.
I'm not mad about it either. I'm more interested in the journey than the destination, It's like, once I knew what they were going to do, I accepted it really, really fast, and I was just like, okay, how are they going to approach this feud differently? What's going to be, that's what I care about. I'm not really mad at something like that. And I think there was a lot of people on the internet that really thought Dolph Ziggler would win the Royal Rumble and the Rock, it's just stuff that just wasn't ever realistically going to happen,
Yeah, it was wishful thinking. Hey man, thanks for calling in. We do appreciate it, my man.
Hey, thank you, Jay.
You got it. All right, Jim, back with you. I'm going to bring back my man TLD. I believe we got a couple more questions for you tonight. TLD, back on the air. What's up, man? TLD, you there? Yes, no? I don't think we got Will. I don't think Will's with us right now. I'll bring John back in. John, you got any more questions for the extreme referee, Jim Molyneux?
I know you said you pretty much train and deal with anybody. What I was going to ask you, even though you kind of answered the question, was do you go more for the guys who can go in the ring nowadays, or do you go more for the guys with the big – bulky look that, will look good but may not work as good?
We'll go for anybody. Like I said, it's about getting that person to their goal. Well, like I said, whether it's a weekend warrior or whether it's, a guy who just, finished his college football career and thinks he's going to be the next John Cena, and if he wants to get to the WWE, then we'll train him that way to get to the WWE. We really haven't turned people away. We got a couple of guys who are doughy and we do have a couple of guys who just finished playing college football who look like they can, in 5 or 6 years, with between training and getting out there and working and getting their name out there and doing the indies, they could be, headlining a WrestleMania. I have no doubt that any one of the guys who have come to us in the last couple of months who's, that's their goal, can reach it as long as they have the dedication. You really need to be dedicated.
Nice, nice. That's awesome, man.
We got TLD back. TLD, what's going on, man?
Everything wrong in my night tonight. So one question I wanted to ask as a promoter as well, do you bring in those big-name talents? Because sometimes it's hard to get people into the arena without having a name or something that convinces them to come to the show. Is that something that you do with OTW?
We don't. Just because the facility isn't large enough for us to get enough people in there to pay for a big name. Otherwise, I wouldn't have a problem bringing a big name in every once in a while. We have been talking to a name to come in that is look at it so that they're local and so you don't have to worry about trans and a hotel and all that kind of stuff. But it's not a WWE name. It's a name that people would know who are wrestling fanatics. I'm not going to say it because he hasn't agreed to come in. In fact, he hasn't even gotten back to us yet. But but we've reached out to a couple of guys like that. But yeah, we just don't have, the facility is not big enough to do something like that. We can fit 150 at the most into our building. And, you know, that's really not enough to cover a big name with travel and all that. Believe me, if I could, I would have been on the phone to Jerry Lynn as fast as I could. If I knew I could afford to bring somebody in, he'd be the first name I'd ever called.
Yeah. You know, and I just recently saw Jerry Lynn wrestle in North Jersey at PWS, and it was one of his last matches on the East Coast, and he's actually wrestling his final match in Jersey, I believe, on February 9th against Lance Storm. And I'm going up there for that. And I'm a huge Jerry Lynn fan myself, and it's a shame that his career is kind of winding down now, but he's one of the guys, and I'm glad you brought him up because I want to do a little word association with you in a moment, but since you brought up Jerry Lynn, he's one of those guys that I feel deserves a job in wrestling for as long as he wants one, you know, like a good paying job, because he's given so much to the business. And what are your thoughts on Jerry Lynn's career?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that WWE and TNA and Ring of Honor and whoever else you want to name company-wise, if somebody doesn't offer Jerry a job, they are making a serious mistake with their company. He can teach so many people so many different things about wrestling. I love the guy. If anybody came out of ECW and should have gotten the break or the push with WWE or whoever, it was Jerry. He just had everything, in my opinion. Some of the matches he did against Lance Storm were memorable. In fact, Jerry and I kidded around about it a little while ago. That a couple of the matches they did, the game of it for them became who can take the least amount of bumps in a match, but still they still would put on probably one of the best worked matches you've ever seen. And I think Jerry won one night 3-4.
That's,
you know,
awesome.
But it was a great match. I mean, they blew me up. So, which really isn't that hard to do, but you know, something like that, and you know, those guys would have so much fun working in the ring together, and would allow me to be part of the fun. There was a unwritten rule between the two of them: overhand chops were not allowed, and I think Lance had thrown a couple at Jerry, and I warned him that I was going to throw a yellow card. That if he did it again.
Oh, that's great stuff. I had a chance to talk to Jerry briefly when I met him at PWS, got my picture with him and everything. And I literally told him, and I don't usually do this, I told him just how much he's meant to the sport and to wrestling overall, you know, in the entire industry, not just in ECW, not just in TNA, not just on the independents, but the entire industry. I know he's been around for a long time, and he is probably helped so many careers along the way, just working with them, giving these guys that experience to kind of, you know, move along in their own careers. And I think he's one of the guys, because he just seems like such a nice dude, that could really appreciate what I said to him. And it's something that he would probably respect, and I can't wait to watch him wrestle. This, I guess it's a week from Saturday in North Jersey, but I'm going to bring back John because I know he's got a couple more questions. John, you got any questions for him?
Yeah, you were talking about the Jerry and Lance matches, Jim. What about the Jerry RVD matches? Did you get to work any of those?
Yeah, I did do a couple of them. Not really the ones that were on TV or pay-per-view, but some of the house show ones. Yeah, I got to do plenty of those. And even toward the end of ECW, when we were doing the house shows, and that was usually the main event, I was letting Mike Keener, one of our other referees, he was usually on the road with us. It was usually myself and Mike on the road as the two referees. I was starting to let Mike do the matches. And he enjoyed them too. I mean, those were great matches. I mean, the ECW had a history of matches like that. I always go back to Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero. And that was really that start of that style of match. And then, you know, it kind of turned into the Lucha match a little bit, but then you had Rob and you had guys like Rob and Candido and Lance and Jerry Lynn who kind of carried on that tradition. Little Guido with doing matches with Tajiri or with Super Crazy. That kind of carried on that kind of tradition, that style of match also. And all those guys were great to work with.
Yeah,
go ahead, John.
Sorry, Jack. Now, one thing I got to admit, I was fortunate enough to see going to all the ECW shows was I felt fortunate to see a Dreamer Raven match at the Lost Battalion Hall. And I think it was for the first TNN taping in the Elks Lodge on Queens Boulevard. They shot a RVD Lynn match. And looking back at those feuds, I was really glad I got to see those two matches live. And it really defined, like Jim said, Eddie and Malenko and Tajiri and Super Crazy, those, it really defined a different side of ECW other than just the hardcore stuff.
Sure, and you also had comedy matches, too. I mean, you had great comedy matches. I mean, not just all it was comedy, but there was comedy involved in when you had guys like Roadkill and Danny Doring and the BWO and the FBI with
Al
Guido and yeah, you had Guido teaming with Tracy Smothers and Tommy Rich as the manager. You know, all that stuff was great. Like I said, you could get any kind of match you wanted on an ECW show.
Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely. I'm going to bring back TLD. He's got another question for you, Jim. TLD, you're on the line. Go for it.
All right. So I've interacted with Mr. John Finnegan and Mike Keener many times. In fact, I fought Keener actually a couple times on the road. And, yeah, he's definitely he's pretty good in the ring. He's very good as far as dictating the match. He wants things to be perfect, which is one thing about Keener I learned about on the road. Tell us a little bit about some of the ECW referees, because those two I've worked with, but if you want to speak about Bill Alfonso or anybody like that, any good stories or memories of them?
Well, John actually trained me. The funny thing is I'm older than John, but John had been in the business longer than me. So he actually trained me, and John and I, if you look at the history of ECW, we're the only two guys that were there the whole time, never left the company, stayed with the company the whole time. We were both at the first tapings at Cabrini College, and John still has a really good job outside of wrestling, so he didn't travel that much with us, and so the last weekend of ECW, I did the very last match in Arkansas. So I'm really the only one who was there first night to last night. But John and I had been there for the longest time. And John and I were kind of like did a little bit of ribbing on some of the younger guys. And we used to torture a lot of the guys, JT Smith, Joey Matthews. We would really give them a hard time. Yeah. But you know, Bill Alfonso was great to have in there. I'll never forget one night we were in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and guys, the ring was set up, and Fonzie was hanging out. We were just sitting around hanging out, talking with people, and one of the guys from the building, a young kid from the building, was setting up the chairs and made some kind of wise ass remark, whether he could do it or it's a bunch of crap and it's not real and nobody gets hurt and all this stuff. And so all of a sudden Fonzie lights up. Hey, Daddy, want to get in the ring? Show me what you can do. And he's like, oh yeah. And, man, Fonzie stretched that guy. He was screaming.
That's awesome. You know, that is awesome.
Fonzie had a ton of years, with, you know, all the time down in Florida and NWA and WWE. So a great amount of respect for him. Fonzie was one of the best.
Yeah, absolutely. And he gained a lot of respect. I'll never forget that one match he had. Were you the referee in the match he had with Beulah McGillicuddy?
I don't think I was.
That thing was...
I know I've seen it 100 times, but yeah, I don't think I was the ref.
That match might have been the bloodiest match in ECW history. Like,
yeah, he hit a gusher.
Yeah, definitely. No question about that. I want to do a quick word association with you. I'm going to just shoot you some names, about 10 names, and you could go on as long or short as you want with these guys. It could be like a couple word answer, or you can tell us a story, either whatever you want to do. But you okay with that?
Yeah, let's see what we can do.
All right, let's start it off. Let's go with Sabu.
Dedicatedly insane.
I love it.
He's just dedicated to what he does, and you have to be insane to do it.
Todd Gordon.
The forgotten mastermind. If it wasn't for Todd starting ECW and getting it to the level it was, it would have never gotten to the level that it did.
How about Joey Styles?
The greatest announcer, in my opinion, there ever was, because Joey made sure that every show, every broadcast he did, every referee was mentioned once. Now, he knew that we weren't part of the show, but he made us real people, which WWE will not do at all. They will not mention them by name. They have lately because of a certain angle that they were doing, but they will not mention them by name, give them any kind of acknowledgement. And Joey acknowledged the referees every time, gave us the respect to do that. And I'll never forgive him for that, or never forget him for that.
That's all. Yeah, he's definitely underrated, in my opinion, in the realm of top announcers of all time. How about Shane Douglas?
An amazing champion. Another one who got us to the level that ECW achieved. I don't think we would have been able to do it without another wrestler, because I don't think anyone would have had the guts to speak up the way he did. To stand up for what we were trying to do, and he was a real leader.
And I'll say to this day, Triple H ripped off Shane Douglas completely in 1999 when he started to get that main event push. How about New Jack?
New Jack, scary as hell, but I don't think I ever felt safer in the ring with anyone who wrestled that style.
That's great. Terry Funk.
An absolute legend. Terry is one of those guys that I could learn from just by putting my gear next to him and kind of leaning over and listening. And ECW was lucky enough to have a handful of those guys come through at various times that I learned from just by listening to them and hearing them give, you know, not necessarily stories, but what they've been through and certain aspects of different things, like learning from Dusty how to make TV look good. And Kevin Sullivan, he's the first guy to ever give me as a referee any kind of respect, where he was putting a match together, and I forget who it was against. But they were going to do something, and he said, no, that makes the referee look stupid. Doesn't that, Jim? Doesn't it make you look stupid? And I was like, oh, my God. I never heard of anybody doing that. This, and at the time, I was still fairly young in the business. So yeah, the ability to learn from anybody like a Terry or a Kevin or Dusty, you know, it's an amazing opportunity. If you're out there and you have the opportunity to learn from somebody who's been through the wars that guys like that have, and you don't learn from them, you're stupid. That's your fault.
He was Terry Funk was my first interview that I ever did with a professional wrestler or a professional wrestling personality ever. And I approached him backstage at a Ring of Honor show, and he was just the nicest guy. We did it on camera, and he literally helped me right through it. And
here's another real quick thing. He said this to me after ECW because we were both at like some sort of convention. In fact, I always think I was interviewing people for a local radio show, wrestling radio show out of the Philadelphia area at the time. And he said to me, "You're the best goddamn referee there ever is for a company that doesn't need a referee." And I, at first I thought, well, that's great. And then I thought, wait a minute, what does he mean by that? You're the awesome. Best ref for a company that doesn't need a ref. Wait a minute. Is that back ass word or what? So I hope to take it as a good thing.
I think it was indirectly a great thing, actually. How about Eddie Guerrero?
Loved Eddie. Eddie could work with pretty much anybody. Did some independent stuff with him besides ECW, and was always great to me. I'll never forget him and those guys, Dean and Chris and all those guys had left ECW at the time and were working for WCW. And we were in Tampa, and I had been out during the day sitting poolside, and only actually for like maybe an hour. And if you don't know, I'm progressively a balding gentleman at a fairly early age. So I was outside for like an hour poolside, and I had a do-rag on my head. And we get to Tampa, and we're doing TV, and I took it off, and I looked in the mirror, and I was like, holy crap, there's this line across my head, a tan line. So Francine and Dawn and the girls grab me, and they pull me into their locker room, and they start putting makeup on me to cover it up, to even it out. And I'll never forget Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko walking in and opening the door and just looking and going, started to laugh and left.
And, that's awesome.
So, yeah, Eddie was a great guy. I loved working with him.
How about Bam Bam Bigelow?
The best, biggest high flyer I've ever seen.
Really? Even with all the luchadors that came through that company?
Yeah, but you know what? He was the biggest man who could fly.
You're right.
He was huge. But and you know what? He had the biggest heart, too. One time we were doing a promotional thing at a local flea market in the South Jersey area. And it was I remember it was around Valentine's Day. And I don't know why I did, but I brought my daughter, who was maybe 5 or 6 at the time. And like I said, it was right around Valentine's Day. And he walked around with my daughter, and he said, "You're going to be my Valentine today." And he carried her everywhere and held her hand and swung hands like a happy couple skipping down, you know, the garden of roses. But yeah, he was great with little kids. He was great with everybody. He's another guy that I was really lucky to work with. I did that match, him and Rob Van Dam from Buffalo, for the TV title, and that was a great match to work.
Yeah, I really hope he gets a spot in the WWE Hall of Fame soon. He was one of my all-time
favorites. I thought he would have gotten it this year. I really do. Maybe he will.
I think it's a good chance that he'll be the guy. How about the Queen of Extreme, Francine?
Francine never got the break that she should have when ECW became part of WWE. I don't know why they never used her. I think she should have. They should have used her. She hung in there all those years with ECW and did everything that Paulie ever asked her to do without a complaint, without a whimper. She stepped up to bat every time. And she's a person who probably should have gotten and deserved a bigger break than she was given.
Yeah, just absolutely beautiful too. And the last one, and how about Chris Benoit?
Yeah, Chris was great to work with too. He really wasn't with ECW all that long. It was a little, I don't want to say it was a short time, but it wasn't like an extended stay. But, you know, him and Shane and Malenko, the original triple threat, were an amazing group. You know, and Chris was great to work with. And, you know, when the tragedy happened, you know, I was really surprised, because, and I think a lot of people were. And now that, you know, because it wasn't the Chris that we all knew. And now with all the research they've done on brain concussions and brain injuries, and now you look back at it, and that really is the reason why, because that wasn't Chris. That wasn't the Chris we all knew.
Yeah, and I you know what? It's when you look at this research with concussions and stuff, when I watch WWE now or TNA, I just get almost sick to my stomach whenever I see somebody take like an unprotected chair shot to the head, or there's just insane trauma, you know, something goes wrong and a headshot is just hit full blast. It really just, it's not the way it used to be back in ECW when I was a teenager, and I would be just bloodthirsty and would love that kind of stuff. Nowadays, it just makes me a little bit queasy, you know, I kind of think the worst.
Yeah, I mean, I've taken my share of chair shots and guitar shots and things like that too, but nothing on the level that those guys have done, especially Chris and guys like Balls Mahoney and Masato Tanaka, you know, Mike Awesome, guys who, you know, really took those chair shots hard and a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Masato Tanaka and Mike Awesome used to destroy each other with those chair shots.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how they did it. I'm going to bring John back. John, you got any final questions for Jim Molyneux tonight?
I've really enjoyed listening to a combination of everything between his school, what he's got going on now, and, you know, reminiscing the old ECW stories. You know, I hope, you know, everything works out with the promotion, you know, expand from those 150 feet, you know, areas to get bigger and just keep going, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, and it's an open invitation. Anybody wants to come out, you know, like I said, we're 30 miles from Atlantic City, 30 miles from Philadelphia, right in the middle of South Jersey. And you know, I think we've had a lot of guys who've worked independents in the past just show up to see what we're doing. And they're like, wow, you guys are really good. You know, you tell good stories and you really get the match across. And like I said, we don't do anything real crazy or anything like that. We definitely do a family oriented show. And we just make sure that we tell a good story. And then, you know, I think a lot of people, if they came out and saw us, would go, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, my buddy Rhett Titus came over the other night for the Royal Rumble, and he put you over pretty good. He said he's been down there and worked for you before.
Yeah, Rhett's a good guy. He came to us before Ring of Honor, worked with us a little bit. Actually, the building we were at was different than where we are now. That was... That building was a real hellhole compared to what we have now. But if you walk into our building now, and you probably go, ooh, because really it's just a warehouse with offices in the front. But it's our home, and it's, you know, I think it really works for us.
That's great. I'm going to definitely try to make my way down to South Jersey to catch a show one of these times. TLD, you're back on. Any final questions or comments for Jim tonight?
Yeah, one thing I would like to know about was, I don't know if I missed it or if you didn't talk about it, was the One Night Stand show. If you can, tell us a little bit about how you got contacted for it and if it was really that ECW feel, because some people had mixed reactions on how it was backstage or how it actually went off. What was your take on it?
Well, the first one or the second one?
I will go with the first one. That's the one people remember.
The first one, yes, there was definitely an ECW feel to it. We were very welcomed. We were told by Vince McMahon in a meeting, he sat us all down, said, guys, this is your show. Go out and do your thing. This is for your fans. Give them what they want to see. It was definitely a different story with the second show. But, yeah, it definitely had the ECW feeling. I think we all felt good, and we really felt that was our – our goodbye, our the closest thing we could probably do to a goodbye for the fans on a national basis.
Yeah, it was definitely tremendous. And final question of the night, and then we'll let you go. We're trying to make this a tradition with every kind of guest we have on the line, but give us a awesome road story, you know, something that might be outrageous, hilarious, whatever you can think of. I just want to hear one great road story.
That's the thing. I really don't have great road stories because I was probably one of the few guys out of the ECW crew, and you would expect these crazy ECW stories, and you could probably get them from other guys. But, man, I was married. I had two kids at home. I really didn't do crazy stuff on the road. Let's see. And this is going to sound tame, but it's kind of a weird story. At the time, my daughter was young, and Al Snow had a daughter, I think it was a daughter, that was young, around the same age. And at the time, Beanie Babies were the big thing. And McDonald's, in their Happy Meals, had these mini Beanie Babies. So Al Snow and I were traveling separately, and we would go to McDonald's for lunch, order Happy Meals, to get the Beanie Babies and to go to the locker room, and we'd exchange Beanie Babies. No, I have this one. How about this? You have this one? I'll trade you that. So that was kind of like the elder statesman, I guess, of ECW at the time, where everybody else was like stumbling in and half eyes closed and things like that.
That's actually a good story. I actually like
that. I'll give you another one. Here's a real quick one.
Sure.
The person I traveled with most of the time was Paul Heyman's assistant, Debbie Beaumont. And the funny thing was, because she was office, so her travel, her car, her rental car was taken care of by the company where the wrestlers and the crew, it wasn't. Well, Debbie didn't have a driver's license. So I drove. So I got to get the free ride. I drive, but it would be one company.
Jim, I think we're losing you, man. We're losing you a little bit.
Oh, how about now?
I got you. I got you back. Okay. Good.
One weekend, we were asked to babysit Nicole Bass.
Oh, Lord.
So, okay, Nicole will drive with us. So we're driving along, and we're in Louisiana. We actually pulled into McDonald's because I had to get the Beanie Baby for Al. And they're playing Born to Be Wild on the radio. So pull into the parking lot, turn the ignition off, get out of the car, and Debbie and I both hear from the back seat, "Born to Be Wild." And it was the most frightening thing I've ever heard.
That is awesome. Thanks for joining us tonight, Jim. Let the fans know like where they could find you, Twitter, Facebook, you know, anything, any plugs you want before you go?
Yeah, don't do Facebook. Twitter, it's real easy. It's just my name, Jim Molyneux, and Molyneux is spelled Molineaux. But you can always check me out through the OTW Twitter page, which is OTW Updates. And check OTW out on the web. Like I said, alltimewrestling.net. You can check out interviews with the guys, profiles, our schedule, selling our t-shirts and DVDs on there. So check it out. I think we're rapidly growing as an independent in the South Jersey area.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us. This was a great interview. We'd love to have you back sometime in the future to talk OTW.
Glad to do it. Anytime, guys.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care. Okay, guys, that was Jim Molyneux, the extreme referee, the one and only extreme referee. He is the man. Fantastic interview. I would go as far to say it was our best interview yet here on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, the main show, every Tuesday night. Definitely check out OTW at oldtimewrestling.net. Don't be confused by the name. It's not old time wrestling. It's classic professional wrestling, something that, you know, it kind of lacks right now in the mainstream when you talk about TNA, WWE, even ROH. I mean, ROH used to be a company that was classic pro wrestling. That's what they did. They don't really do it anymore, you know. So if you're in the South Jersey area, anywhere in Jersey, Philadelphia, go check out OTW with Jim Molyneux running the show, guys. And so, John and Will, what are your thoughts on the interview we just had with Jim Molyneux?
I thought it was very good. You know, I mean, I think he has a lot of great stories to tell us. And, you know, it's good to hear some of those good ECW stories. I'm sure there's so many that we could have a whole probably show on his stories and his experiences on there. But what I definitely know is that I think he's looking at the new world champion of OTW right here on radio. His name is TLD Wrestling at TLDWrestling.com.
Hey, you know what? You should connect with him because he knows his shit. He knows what's going on. Very well-spoken guy. Stories were fantastic. Remember, he's learned from some of the best in the business. So please, guys, if you're listening, whether it's on Blog Talk Radio or right now live in the archive section or on iTunes, give him a follow at Jim Molyneux. That's M-O-L-I-N-E-A-U-X, spelled, you know, in a French style, Jim Molyneux. Give him a follow. Check him out. Check out OTW. We appreciate having him on the air. Awesome interview. John, what are your thoughts on the interview?
Yeah, I mean, as an old God, I hate throwing that word around, but as an old school ECW, you know, fan from back, you know, almost 20 years ago, hearing some of those, you know, rehashing some of those stories and a lot of stuff I remember seeing, you know, live, you know, at those two venues on Queens Boulevard, you know, it really brought back a lot. And, you know, just some of the stuff, even something simple like the Al Snow story that he told was just awesome. You know, when you would think of a locker room of guys that, like he said, would be straggling in, you know, three quarters of their eyes shut, to hear a story like that, it was a nice touch to that promotion, you know. And his word association with Paul Heyman was exactly what I think it was Tommy who said it on one of the ECW DVDs, almost said it word for word about Paul. You know, great mind, great genius, you know, great character, just bad businessman. And, I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll definitely reconnect with Jim in the future. It was an awesome interview. Guy's a class act. You know, he was very easy to keep in touch with throughout the weeks leading up to this interview. And we'll reconnect with him in the future. If you guys want to hear more ECW stories, you know, we'll do a different word association, updates on OTW, Classic Pro Wrestling. You know, let me know. Hit me up on Facebook, facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse, where we're over 1,000 likes. Unbelievable. And hit us up on Twitter at PW Powerhouse. Check out John at JCD1219NY and TLD at TLD Wrestling. But speaking of Paul Heyman, it's a perfect segue to last night's Monday Night Raw, a little bit of Raw talk tonight. And I got to say, just we'll kick it off this way. Paul Heyman, in his delivery last night with Mr. McMahon at the end of the show, was awesome. It was kind of a lackluster Raw, in my opinion, top to bottom. There were great moments throughout, but the show as a whole, if I was rating it, didn't think it was that great. There wasn't a lot of great wrestling, a couple good matches here and there. But Paul Heyman's performance at the end put it over the top for me. It took it from maybe like a C show to like a B plus, because he was so convincing. And that really, he told a great story on his own before we even, you know, got to Brock Lesnar coming back and all that stuff. TLD, what were your thoughts last night on Paul Heyman and the whole Brock Lesnar, Vince McMahon situation? TLD, you with us?
Sorry, okay. I'm on mute, man. I'm trying to help you guys out while I'm out on the road. I'm sorry. I am
right,
so,
man,
like, out of it. I apologize for my...
Did you get the question? Thoughts on
Paul Heyman? Yeah, I got the question. I thought it was a very good – I mean, it was obviously – it ended the whole storyline of, you know, this could be the end of, you know, Paul Heyman's association with Punk, and now it's kind of – he's back with Lesnar. You know, great ending to the show. Definitely showed a really new side of, you know, that this, you know, that Paul Heyman, that this, you know, that conniving Paul Heyman, you know, that he is. And it was a really, really good show overall in the end. I thought it was – I would say that the whole show is great, but I thought it wasn't as bad as most people are saying it is. I would say it's a better way of saying it. But the ending was all worth it, I'm sure. I mean, you can't really complain about the ending.
No, absolutely not. I mean, that, like I said before, leading up to that moment, I believe, you know, Jericho coming out and then the Paul Heyman segment where he was just so convincing, just perfect in his delivery, saying, you know, that was not me. And just brilliance on his part. John, what were your thoughts about this?
I loved Heyman last night. From top to bottom, you know, his interaction with Vince was great. And, you know, just the little things Heyman did. You know, with the it's not me, that wasn't Paul Heyman. I was actually waiting for him to say that was Paulie Dangerously. And then when Brock came out and he told Brock, I got this, and Brock just gave him the look of the corner, Heyman just turned to Vince, get out of the ring. Vince, get out of the ring. Just that little stuff just was so perfect, and he was on point all night. I also, you know, it really made you buy into it, realizing, I mean, it was obvious where it was going. You know, once, like, 9:50 came and that segment hadn't happened, you knew where it was going. But Heyman's delivery just made it. It wasn't about watching a segment to get to the end. It was actually made the whole segment worth it, and it drove the point home. And I'm interested to see how they go about it with Triple H and Lesnar. I'm even interested to see where Punk, Lesnar, and Heyman go from here. Excuse me. They just told a great story last night in that, you know, 8 to 10 minute segment.
Yeah, it kind of made you wonder, you know, was Punk, CM Punk, all in with the Shield being involved in his matches? I think he was. They kind of alluded to, you know, Brad Maddox was saying, you know, tell Punk I'm sorry or whatever, and so it kind of makes you believe that he was involved, but once again, you don't really know because
here's
he wasn't.
The genius with Heyman, Jay, he said we. He never named, when they were doing that backstage segment with Maddox, he never said Punk by name. He just said, we paid you when we need you to do a job. So it kind of leaves it open as to, is Heyman talking about somebody other than Punk?
Yeah, very possible. There's a lot of roads they can go with this. And, you know, we're just going to wait and see what's going to take place. I want to talk a little bit right now about the new WWE champion, The Rock. This worked amazingly for WWE. You know, The Rock wins the championship, and ratings go through the roof last night. I mean, compared to what they've been, anyway. Raw drew about 5 million viewers. A final rating of a 3.7 or 3.8, I believe. And just amazing business they did last night on what was kind of a lackluster show, entertaining at times, but everybody tuned in to see The Rock. So a TLD, The Rock's won, you know, two nights into his WWE Championship reign. What were your thoughts on what transpired last night between The Rock and CM Punk?
You know, I had people coming up today who I work with that were like, oh, I didn't know the Rock won the WWE Championship. Oh, I can't wait to watch that. What does that tell you right there?
No, that tells you
just
that.
If I have a fan who has not watched since the Attitude Era come up to me and tell me that the Rock's the WWE Champion. So everyone's complaining that the Rock's the champion right now. All the wrestling fans are complaining right now who have been watching. I'm like, you are the biggest morons to think that this was not the smart decision, you know. And on the show, even on the on PWP TV, we were talking about, you know, how CM Punk should win the belt. But then after watching how the whole show went, CM Punk did indeed pin The Rock. You know, he got that moment where he did pin The Rock. So that was good on Punk's part. But at the end of the day, The Rock's the champion. You know what? It's about the media publicity. That's what it's really all about, ladies and gentlemen. I don't care if he's not going to wrestle on Raw or he's not going to be around. You know, it's not about that. You know,
yeah,
it's about the ratings right now. And you have to understand that. And I think people who are, like right now, one guy's talking to me on Facebook right now about how it was a wrong decision for The Rock champion. I'm like, in 1999, we all wanted The Rock. Now all of a sudden we don't like him? Like, since when?
Yeah.
What if people hate The Rock?
And not even going back that far, TLD, not even going back that far. When The Rock took his, you know, 8-9 years off, whatever it was, everybody was clamoring for him to come back. There were so many people who were like, you know, when's The Rock coming back? We need to bring back The Rock. We need to see The Rock versus Cena. We need to see The Rock versus so-and-so. And guess what? The Rock came back, and what happened? Everybody turned on the idea again. It just doesn't make a lot of sense because it's perfect business for WWE. It makes, in my mind, it makes all the sense in the world. Although I personally would have liked to see CM Punk get to 500 days, maybe drop the belt at WrestleMania, and that I think is the gripe of a lot of the fans. I completely understand it. And when The Rock won, although I could have gone without the restart, like I said Sunday night, when The Rock won the WWE Championship, big smile went across my face. I was like the cat that just got the canary. I loved it. It was just an awesome nostalgic moment. The Rock once again WWE champion. JCD, let's hear your thoughts about this.
All right, I pretty much spoke my mind Sunday night about it. Here's my thing with it, and this is what I said Sunday night. And I also thought of it another way. Rock's going to do publicity for the company no matter what going into WrestleMania. They're going to get publicity off The Rock, whether he's the WWE champion, the Intercontinental champion, the Cruiserweight champion. Rock's going to do publicity, and Rock's going to help them do numbers. They would have popped the rating last night whether Rock won the title or not, because you would have either had Rock winning the title or some sort of screwjob finish that people would have went into. And here's the thing with The Rock. I wanted Rock back. I wanted Rock to beat Cena at WrestleMania. So I am going to be perfectly honest with that. And I was happy when he came back. I was happy that he beat Cena at WrestleMania. I felt it was the right thing. Here's my problem with this. Besides the fact that after everything that Punk has been through, to have Rock of all people be the guy that ends it, and ends it the way that he did. You know, it should have been a little more climactic. Do the WrestleMania 19 ending where he's got to do three rock bottoms, a people's elbow to put Punk down. But put Punk down with one people's elbow kind of spit in the face of Punk.
Yeah, but he now, listen, let's just be serious for a second. He gave Punk a rock bottom outside the ring, attempted to give him one through the table, all right? So at this point, when the match was restarted, The Rock, you know, his momentum meter was going up. He was able to store a finisher. He hit his signature move. When you hit your signature move, you automatically get a finisher. So he hit the people's elbow. He got his special. He made it happen. In the world of WWE 13, this would have been the finish. That's it. Game over.
Okay. And I'll even give you that, but here's the thing. 2 minutes earlier, he got put through a table by the Shield. That's where it's like the ending is like a little like, Now, my beef with this is, all right, I said my point about the house show Sunday night. Here's my point even more so than that. Guess who's not going to be at Raw Monday night? Rock.
He's going to miss one Raw. Okay, big deal.
Is it just one? Is it just going to be one?
We'll see. We'll see what happens. I want to bring back real quick Chris, my man KME. He called earlier during the interview with Mr. Jim Molyneux. And, Chris, I know you got a lot to say about this, and John might be on the other side of the table from you. So let's hear your thoughts on what we're talking about.
I'm with TLD and the other guy on this one, man. I don't understand how anyone can realistically complain about the Rock winning the WWE title when he said the next night after WrestleMania, I'm winning the title. On Raw 1000, he said that he's fighting at the Royal Rumble, and I'm going to win the WWE title. You can't get millions of people like that excited about Rock winning the world title and not deliver on it. It makes no sense fiscally, from a rating standpoint. I was watching CNN after The Rock won the title. It was a headline on CNN that The Rock came back to wrestling and won the title. This is like, you know, if ER was still on the air, George Clooney joining the cast of ER again, man. The Rock has moved so far up in his career, and to come back to wrestling, and, you know, like you said, 3.7, 3.8 in the ratings, numbers don't lie.
They would have drew that either way. They would have drew either way last night.
That is real crap.
They would have definitely drew that rating had Rock lost. Definitely, because you know what people would have wanted to see the fallout of it.
Well, yeah, they would have popped that rating either way. Yeah, but they would have done that rating with The Rock on the show. That's the point. I mean, if The Rock loses the match, everybody wants to see The Rock get his revenge and what he's going to do. Basically, the bottom line about it is just like KME said, if The Rock lost that match, you're not going to see that headline on CNN. It's not going to be there. It's just – it's not going to. There's no possible way that if The Rock lost that match, they were going to get any kind of positive publicity from CNN whatsoever or any publicity in general.
Would it have made more sense than to do it at Elimination Chamber?
I don't think so, because Elimination Chamber is not, I'm not going to say a B pay-per-view. It's on the road to WrestleMania, but it's not one of the big, you know, three or four pay-per-views WWE does a year. Four pay-per-views, I'd say.
And more
you know,
time to promote it. And more time to promote Mania as Rock as a champion. That's
why
that,
not.
Why
not
comes
pop
down to that.
A bigger buy rate for Elimination Chamber on the rematch.
Oh, it's gonna pop! It's gonna pop!
Oh, it's gonna pop!
Rematch, absolutely. You're gonna have, you're gonna possibly have two Elimination Chamber matches on the show. That, you know, The Rock doesn't need to be involved in that chamber. Although I would have liked to see it. I think it would have been kind of a cool visual to see The Rock locked inside one of those Elimination Chambers and to come out and maybe go on top that way, a la Shawn Michaels at Survivor Series 2002 in the first one. But I'm totally fine with it because you can use that chamber with now other superstars, and you don't need CM Punk or The Rock to be involved. Hey, go for it.
Yeah, I just think they would have gotten the same stuff out of it had they put it off an extra month.
It's like TLZ just said though, you have so long to build up. I mean, Elimination Chamber is 3 weeks away, I believe, and The Rock, we still don't know what's going to happen at that show. We don't know how that match is going to play out, transpire. You got to believe there's going to be more controversy. Probably won't be a clean 1-2-3 either way, but who knows if there's going to be any stipulations involved. The road to WrestleMania has just begun. We got a lot of time until WrestleMania. We got almost 70 days. So 3 weeks away, when you get on that time between Elimination Chamber and WrestleMania, you got another 50 days, 45 days before the show. And that is going to be a long time for The Rock as WWE champion. Whether he's going to be on the show every week is not really known right now. But, hey, we just got to grin and bear it for the time being. I'm for it. KME, you got any final comments?
Yeah, I'm just, you know, to me, to be upset at The Rock winning the title at the Royal Rumble is like watching the Titanic and being mad when the ship sinks. It's something that we knew was going to happen. The Cena winning the Royal Rumble, I knew that was going to happen too. I mean, I think as wrestling fans, we kind of get caught up in our scenarios and our delusions of grandeur of what we think and what we want to happen. But the reality is WWE isn't a money-making business.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for calling in and joining us, Chris. We appreciate it. Call in any time. We're on the air every single week, Tuesday night at 9. And we've actually got three weekly shows now. So call in, join us anytime, my man.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that was Chris KME. I've known him for a long time. He's a good guy. You can find him on a lot of the various forums on Facebook. He's also on some other radio network on Blog Talk Radio that I'm not going to plug because that guy was very, very, very unprofessional in his approach. The guy who owns it, not Chris, but anyway, Let's keep going with this, though. There's so much to talk about, and what I want to know is we're only 2 days after the Royal Rumble. The Elimination Chamber is 3 weeks away. Real quick, guys, I'm going to kick it to TLD first. I want to hear your prediction on the way WWE is going to book the Elimination Chamber matches. Let's just assume there's going to be two matches that they will book in the Elimination Chamber. One we know will not be for the WWE Championship. What's your prediction on how these matches will be booked?
I think we're honestly only going to have one chamber match, I think, this year, honestly. If I was to be the booker on this one, I think it's going to be for the number one contender for the World Heavyweight title for WrestleMania. I see that being the only – like having another chamber right now, I don't know what possibilities they could do. If I to do something completely different, I would love to see a tag team Elimination Chamber. That, to me, would be something different. But I don't think they're going to go that route. Whoa, he just jumped in. But anyway, I think that would be the only possibility. But I see that they're going to be doing Alberto Del Rio and Big Show for the World Heavyweight title. It's pretty obvious, unless the spoilers say something different, which I don't want to know, by the way. And other than that, I think they're only going to have one chamber match. This pay-per-view is already sold again. You're going to have Punk, and you're going to have, you know, that. Or, if anything, they might have the Shield versus the three baby faces they took out, and maybe they'll have as a team kind of way, a team elimination chamber, kind of like a War Games in a way.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say. I mean, John, Seth, Bill, we were talking about earlier on Twitter, and I think that's exactly where they're going to go. They're going to have a War Game style elimination chamber match. It's obvious. I mean, Triple H is the guy who's kind of calling the shots right now. I mean, obviously Vince McMahon's still the guy, but Triple H is calling a lot of the shots backstage, from what I understand. He's an old school NWA mark, no doubt about it, and I'm sure he would love to see a War Games type of feel. If you put the Shield and you put, you know, you take two guys from the Shield and I'm sorry, you take one guy from the Shield, one guy from Team Cena, Sheamus, and Ryback, have them start it, you know, maybe do the old coin flip, or even just make it completely random, you know, just like they do the Elimination Chamber, make it completely random. You know, obviously the heel will win, the Shield will be 2-on-1, and then you just, you make it so, you add a stipulation where there's not going to be a pinfall until all guys are into the ring, so you technically have War Games all over again, but in the Elimination Chamber, I think that would be awesome. I'm calling it right now. Cena, Ryback, Sheamus against the Shield. It'll blow off this whole entire Shield coming out and attacking people randomly. And then these talented individuals. We all know Ambrose. I know a lot about Ambrose and Rollins. Don't know so much about Reigns, but it's obvious that they all are talented. They all have a presence on the show. Reigns looks like $1 million. The guy is huge. And they can get on with their careers a little bit and just maybe start wrestling some matches on Raw. That would be really nice to see. And my other prediction is actually an Elimination Chamber match for the World Heavyweight title, and I'll tell you why. Because we've seen Big Show versus Del Rio now twice, two Last Man Standing matches, and it's quite obvious that Big Show is going to get some kind of reprimand from Booker T for what he did to Alberto on Raw and Ricardo, for that matter. You know, it was kind of a vicious beatdown, and I have a feeling it's going to be, and I'm going to throw the names out there, and I don't know any spoilers. I don't know what's going on, but this is my prediction. Alberto Del Rio defends in the Elimination Chamber match against Big Show, Jericho, Dolph Ziggler, Randy Orton, and if you got one more guy, Big Show, Jericho, Ziggler, Orton, Alberto,
Ricardo.
You know, it could you could kind of plug anybody into that. That's what I was kind of saying earlier. I would think it would be a high-flying guy. I don't really – it doesn't really matter if it's heel or face, in my opinion. It could be Kofi, Rey Mysterio, Sin Cara, Cody Rhodes, Damian Sandow, Daniel Bryan Kane, whoever. Plug another guy in there, and I think that would be an awesome World Heavyweight title match. I really think to really stack this show and go all out, you should do two Elimination Chambers, have one kick off the show, don't have one end the show, still have The Rock and Punk end the show, one to kick it off, one in the co-main event, Rock and Punk to end it. And that's my prediction. John, let's hear yours, my man.
I'm going with I think the tag match is obvious after last night. You'll get it elimination style. I don't, maybe not War Game style, but elimination, you know, so you can create the potential for 3-on-1, 2-on-1, all that stuff. Rock Punk's announced. I think they're going to go Del Rio Big Show one more time, straight up. I think the Elimination Chamber, and again, I don't know any spoilers either, but I think it's going to be for the number one contendership. I think you're going to have Ziggler maybe in there. Jericho may be in there. Orton, because Orton seems to be the odd man out of all the Shield stuff, which makes me wonder about where Orton's headed. Maybe you could throw Cesaro and Miz in there. And then maybe, like you said, maybe like Kofi. For the number one contendership, and how awesome would it be if Ziggler won that as well as had his money in the bank? I think that would make a really interesting storyline with the World Heavyweight title and Ziggler. I think you're going to get some sort of tag title, maybe, you know, Fatal 4-Way or something, because something happened last night. I don't know if you guys caught it during the Team Hell No Jericho-Ziggler match when Kane and Bryan started looking at each other like, what the hell did you do? They started arguing against each other. They won. I think that's where they're going to drop the belt and break up, and you're going to get Kane-Ziggler at WrestleMania. And I think you're also looking at Bo Dallas against Wade Barrett for the IC title. and Caitlin and Tamina probably for the Divas.
Well, yeah, I know you meant not Kane Ziggler, but Kane Bryan. And, I think that's a pretty good plan to go with it. But, you know, as far as breaking that team up, and since you brought it up, I really don't think they should. I know they kind of planted the seeds a little bit at Royal Rumble and then kind of went with it a little bit more last night. I think these guys are still on top of their games as a tag team, considering what they did at Royal Rumble. You know, they win the tag team match, and what they did within that match was absolutely hilarious. So I really think they should continue in that direction. But, yeah, those are pretty good predictions, I think, all around the board for what's going to take place at Elimination Chamber. But, we're kind of winding down tonight on PWP Radio. I know next week, live on the show, we've got an independent wrestling standout, and he will be taking on none other than your favorite principal, Mr. Belding. That's right, Mr. Belding. It's now a tag team match where Devin Moore is going to be teaming up with another member of Kevin Matthews' stable there, Reality Check, to take on Mr. Belding. And I guess a partner to be named. I'm not really sure if it was announced yet or not. But, it's going to be a tag team match. Mr. Belding will be stepping inside a Pro Wrestling Syndicate ring. That's February 9th. In Metuchen, New Jersey, there's a sportsplex up there. I'll be there for sure. We're going to talk to Devin Moore about that and about his career wrestling on the East Coast. So that's next week on the show. John, why don't you give us a little preview for tomorrow night? And oh, you didn't know.
Yeah, tomorrow night, me and Seth, we got Allie Parker. She's based out of Las Vegas on the West Coast, so we've had her lined up for a couple weeks. So we got her tomorrow night, and I'm sure, you know, me and Seth will go over, you know, to get Seth's take on Raw and the Royal Rumble, and see also what breaks during the day tomorrow. You know, one thing we didn't touch on tonight, and she deserves it, big ups to Trish for the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I'm really excited about that, too. They did a great job honoring her last night with that video package.
The video package was awesome.
It was. You really kind of don't realize that during that whole span of her career, she was just a mainstay. She was always there. And I think a lot of wrestling fans kind of took her for granted a little bit about how just good and consistent she was over that time period. A lot of people.
I'll tell you something.
Go for it.
Real quick about Trish, and this is where the old man knowledge comes in. Right around the time that she was doing the affair stuff with Vince, when they did the whole thing with her in the ring barking like a dog and this and that, the intention was to get her to quit. She had a big deal that she signed early, and they wanted to get out of it. And they figured, all right, if we humiliate her and embarrass her, she'll quit. And she never did. And then finally that November, when she took that Divas title at Survivor Series, she basically saved her job and her career. But they originally were looking to get out from under her.
That's interesting. Where did you hear that from?
Oh, that was making the rounds back then when it happened in 2000 and 2001. And, you know, my friend, I'll never forget, a buddy of mine turned me on.
That's a rumor.
That was making the rounds back then, Will.
Listen, that to me could be very well the case. I mean, that was straight up humiliation that she had on Monday Night Raw. That segment made the rounds around regular media. It wasn't just a wrestling thing. It made the rounds media. But we've got about 90 seconds left. TLD, any final comments tonight on PWC Radio?
Yeah, let's enjoy for what the Royal Rumble was. I thought it was a great show. Raw was pretty good overall. You know, it gave us some great, you know, I mean, not so much wrestling, but great storyline progression. And we're going to WrestleMania, and I cannot wait for Mania. It gets me more pumped up every time the next Raw or SmackDown pops up.
Yeah, the road started. JCD, any final comments tonight?
We'll see what happens along the way. You know, and we'll see. I guess we all got to see how it plays out. It looks like the first three are definitely coming to fruition that's been out there. But let's see what else they do, and let's see what they surprise us with. That they definitely go, you know, against what's been put out there, and let's see how creative they get.
Absolutely, and don't forget to check out Oh You Didn't Know tomorrow night live on PWP Radio, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, and check out Oh You Didn't Know on Facebook. Type in Oh You Didn't Know Radio. It'll pop right up. It's a brand new page. Keep up to date with what's going on with the show. Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio each and every week right here live. Thanks to TLD. Thanks to Jim Molyneux for joining us. We really appreciate it. And for JCD. Keep it real, everybody. Catch you next week.
Later.
Keep it real.
We'll be right back.